Before we begin, let's close our eyes and bring ourselves to this moment. Let go of what we were doing before, 5 minutes before, an hour before, and bring ourselves to focus on this topic, this time. Let us learn together. May God come through all of us. Salut. So today we're going to talk about God's prophets in general, and how they have been treated by humanity, the reception they received, whether we were good to them or bad to them, and the lessons we can learn from how we have treated them in the past and how it can help us in the future. So, to start off with talking about God's prophets, we first have to understand what a prophet of God is. And to understand that, as in all of Maitreya's lectures, he always starts, you know, no matter which lecture or which topic he's on, he always starts in eternity, because that's where the eternal divine path truly starts. So to truly understand who is a prophet of God, you have to go back to the beginning of creation and Adam and bringing humanity to Earth and to the universe and bringing the consciousness to the universe, actually. And of course, as we know, God created the universe and brought the unit consciousnesses to the universe to provide them a better place to learn the lessons that they had to learn. They were in darkness. God created compassion and wanted to help them, and so created the universe in order to bring them to light. Now, before 12,000 years ago, or when creation was first created, as Maitreya has explained to us, man was mostly an ethereal being, and still had direct access to the spiritual world and to God, in a sense. They were directly connected to spirit, their third eyes were open, they had spiritual powers. There was no question of whether God existed at that time. You know, it was clear to them. They were directly connected. From Adam's time all through up until the flood of Noah 12,000 years ago, they were directly connected. Of course, they became more and more gross over that time, but still, before 12,000 years ago, they still had that direct connection to God. So, if they were connected in such a way, then why would they need a prophet? Because the spiritual truth could be revealed to them directly. And in fact, we see that's what happens in the Bible. You know, God speaks directly to Adam and Eve, and he says, you know, thou shalt do this and this and this, and you can enjoy my beautiful universe, just don't eat of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And of course they did, and it was never a question of, you know, does God exist? It was a question of, we know you exist, but we don't want to do what you're telling us anyway, and we want to do our own way. But there is no real prophet of God before 12,000 years ago. There were no prophets. There were certain people that were shown to have walked with God, such as Enoch, you know, one of the only that said that they followed the spiritual path, but no prophet is listed. Adam could be considered as a prophet, but he didn't really bring a message or have a mission. He was just, you know, a symbol of the beginning of humanity. So what happens then? So God finally decides that this way is not working, and he has to bring humanity even more gross and further crucify him and remove him from any power and make him completely helpless in order to further his spiritual understanding. And so, you know, we know the story. He sends the flood of Noah and destroys the earth, or, you know, it's a symbol of destruction, and brings a new man into the world whose third eye is closed. And at this point, the man is completely cut off from the spiritual realm. And because of that, he has no knowledge of spirit and has no direct connection to God, and in fact can even comprehend of the fact that God does not exist. And at this point, of course, God can no longer reveal revelations directly or you know, can people can no longer go to God directly to speak to him. That's part of the plan. So instead, he sends messengers or people specifically ordained by him to bring us his messages and perform his duties on earth, do his will. He chooses from the people that are higher spiritually, and in this way everything is completely under his control. So now we need prophets of God in order to understand God's will, in order to be helped to return back to the source. And so they are very important. They are the channel, the bridge between truth and humanity, between God and man, and no one goes to the Father but through them. So what are some examples? Well, alright, well, let's say this. First, also, as we know, there are two kinds of prophets. There are major manifestations and there are minor manifestations. The major manifestations are those that bring the major revelations to earth, the steps of the eternal divine path, and represent God directly as the Son of God, or the first begotten Son, etc. And they bring the major manifestations. The earth's evolution is accelerated at that time, and they are the most important prophets. And then, of course, there are the minor manifestations, the minor prophets, that come to confirm the major manifestations, their revelations, or bring a message to a specific people that you're going the wrong way, or perform a specific mission. And there are many, many of these, far more than we know of, all over the world, probably. And so what are some examples of major manifestations, and what are some examples of minor prophets? That's right. Lunch is over. You can't sleep anymore. You have to talk.
There's Abram or Abraham.
Minor prophet, St. Francis of Assisi.
I don't know how to spell Assisi. That will do.
Major prophet, Noah.
Put him first.
Oh, what about Adam?
Yeah, even Adam. Mm-hmm. Probably the only prophet that was before the 12,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. Only or one of the only. Oh, Tahira writes Isa, major. Okay. Well, if you guys know these, I know you do. Muhammad, Bab, Baha'u'llah. Who else, Kiyosha?
Well, I don't know if this can count or not because it wasn't the conspiracy, but I was thinking Joan of Arc was a minor prophet, but that's, I don't think that's, does that go on the list? I guess you tell me.
I'm not, perhaps. I will leave it off just because I'm not sure, but it's possible. You know, she seemed to be a great soul in some ways.
How about a minor prophet of Jeremiah?
Jeremiah.
And also Jonah.
Jonah. Mm-hmm. Eunice.
Yeah, Jonah.
Eunice. That's his name in the Eastern religions. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we have Baba. And then of course, Maitreya. That's not a mistake to make in this lecture. Abraham, and then, you know, many others also consider Jacob, you know, to be a major prophet, and the other patriarchs of the Jewish religion. David.
Mm-hmm. David, yeah.
And then there are many, many minor prophets, you know. And of course, there are others up here in the mystical paths. Krishna, Shiva, Buddha. Mm-hmm. Even, it's possible, we don't really talk about it in the mission, but Masau, you know, for the Native Americans, seems to have occupied a similar position as Christ in many ways, giving them the way to live. I won't write it, but go ahead.
Zoroaster?
Yeah,
I was just thinking that one.
That's right, Zoroaster. Other minor prophets, you could say perhaps Joseph Smith.
Mm-hmm. The Mormon religion.
Mm-hmm.
Isaac?
Isaac. Yeah. I don't know which one Isaac really goes in, but
Samuel,
that's right.
That would be all the Old Testament prophets, right?
Pretty much. Every Old Testament prophet besides for those few patriarchs that I think Isaac is included as one of them, the patriarchs. But in any case, yes, exactly. All of those Solomon. Yep. Or Solomon also is sometimes considered as one of the major prophets. It depends on who you talk to. The Isaac or Isaac, David, Solomon. So I'll put those in the middle. Assisi was a saint. Ah, not a prophet. Okay. I'm not going to get into saints. But I guess I will. Maitreya says remove that one. But, and many others, of course. And, you know, they're in the Native America. I'm sure there are many, many minor prophets that we have never heard of, you know, in Africa, maybe Australia, and all over the world that have brought these messages. But, of course, we have heard of many in the Old Testament and in other places, many other places.
And there's Shiva, too.
Shiva.
He's a major, isn't he? Yeah, you've got him. Okay.
Okay. So the point is that these prophets are sent by God to help us, right? God is not a mean God that's trying to hurt us or make us not enjoy the universe. He created the universe for a purpose, and that purpose is to help us. The universe is created from compassion, not anger. And the prophets are sent from compassion, not anger. And the question is, have we treated them accordingly? Have we reacted in the way that one reacts to a helping hand, usually? And so the best way to answer this question is to go through them one by one. Ready? So, let's start with number one, Noah, the first progenitor of the mystical paths from which all the other mystical paths, the base of the mystical teachings comes from, spread out throughout the earth, and of course further purified and perfected by other prophets that came later. How did we treat Noah? What happened to Noah? Someone tell me the story.
Noah was building a big ship in the middle of the desert. Mm-hmm. Everybody thought he was absolutely nuts. What was he doing building this big ship in the middle of the... I don't know if it was a desert, but anyway, on land. Why was he... And people ridiculed him. They laughed at him. They told him that he was crazy. Mm-hmm. And his whole family was ostracized. At least that's the feeling you get from reading the story in the Bible.
This picture pretty much sums it up, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Can you feel his disbelief at these people laughing at him? You fools.
Mm-hmm. He's trying to tell them.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, in the Bible, it says very little about what exactly happened to Noah. All it says is pretty much that he was commanded to build an ark, and he did so, and then the waters came and destroyed him. But in the Quran, it goes into more detail. And it says exactly what you said, Sergi. It says that they said, "O Noah, thou hast disputed with us and multiplied disputation with us. Now bring upon us that wherewith thou threatenest us, if thou art of the truthful." As in, well, you know, if you're going to, you know, you threatened us, now do it, basically. And he says, "Only Allah will bring it upon you if he will, and ye can by no means escape. My counsel will not profit you. If I were minded to advise you, if Allah's will is to keep you astray, he is your Lord, and unto him ye will be brought back." And then later on it says, "And he was building the ship, and every time the chieftains of his people passed him, they made mock of him. He said, though ye make mock of us, yet we mock at you even as ye mock." And that's all we really know about Noah. But it's clear that he offered, you know, he gave them warning. And he said, this is what's going to happen. And not one of them was interested. And of course, God knew that. God knows our hearts. But if they had accepted him, then the disaster would have been avoided, as always. But they did not, so it was not. Now we go to the second seal and focus on a few main prophets here. So let's start with Abraham. What's the story of Abraham? How does it go? Nobody?
God said to get you out of thy country and... can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Test. Okay, God told him to leave the territory he was in and go into the territory that God would show him. And so that's the big thing about that. And also the other story I remember about Abraham is he knocked over the idols.
Very good.
And also God tested him with his son Isaac. And maybe Ishmael, too, to see how submissive he was to God.
Mm-hmm. So we don't know much about the story of Abraham. It was a long time ago. And again, the Bible only tells us essentially that he was told to get out of his country and go to the new land. And he did so. And he was given many promises from God. He was tested. And there were a few, I think, parts about, you know, working with his neighbors, and he was in Egypt once, perhaps, or maybe that was probably not Abraham. I think that was someone else. But it doesn't say much. It doesn't tell us much about how the people reacted around him. And in fact, it didn't seem like he really interacted with others too much. God told him to go to a new place, and he created a new tribe, you know, from him and his offspring. So he didn't get involved too much with the other humans. But there is that story, that one time that it talks about when he did, when he went to Nineveh and destroyed the idols, and told, and put the hammer in the hand of the... This is actually in the Quran. It's again in the Quran, the story. And he asks, why do you worship the idols? And they say, because our ancestors did. And when they go away, he destroys all the idols. He breaks them into pieces with a hammer, except for the biggest one. And then he puts the hammer in the hand of the biggest one. And when they come back, they see that all their gods have been destroyed, and they ask, who has done this, you know, the terrible thing? And someone tells them that Abraham did it, and they go to Abraham, they said, have you done this thing? And he said, no, the big idol did it. Can't you see? He's got the hammer in his hand. And they said, how can the big idol do it? He's just a statue. And he's like, well, why do you worship him then? And of course, they got very angry at that, and the story says that they laid their hands upon him and tried to burn him alive. So, it's obviously the lesson didn't get to them. But and Moses was one that we forgot earlier. Although I don't think Maitreya considers him the most major of the prophets, but it's definitely one of the more well-known stories. So, what happens to Moses?
Moses brought the Ten Commandments.
Mm-hmm. What happens at the very beginning of his life, when he's first born?
Oh, in the basket. Put in the basket.
Well, they try to kill him, don't they? They don't even know who he is. All they have is a prophecy. That a child might cause them problems. Or, I mean, it says a child will, but all they have is the prophecy, and they kill all the children.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he's saved, as we know, and he grows up in the Pharaoh's house. And, you know, eventually leaves and goes to the desert, receives the revelation. Tahira says he had to go through the desert in order to receive what God had to reveal to him and become a prophet, exactly. And then then he goes back to Egypt, and he tells Egypt of God's will, and of course they don't accept him, and they attack him and persecute him and make the lives of the Jews harder and do as much as they can to resist the will. And then, of course, finally they let him go and have a change of heart when he's already left with the Jews and tried to go bring them back. And, of course, are destroyed. And then even after he brings them out of the land, they murmur against him, and they end up worshiping the golden calf. And Tahira says, as with all prophets, they have to be in silence and alone with God to receive their message from him. And that is true. There's a period of time in every prophet's life where that happens. And then finally, of course, he's again, he's also you know, the Hebrews don't listen to him. I should have said Hebrews, not Jews, all this time. But the Hebrews don't listen to him, and they reject him, essentially. You know, they choose a golden calf over his laws, and they're forced to wander for 40 years. And so, as you can see, I'm focusing on what other people have reacted, how they have reacted. And in each case, there were only a very few, you know, in both of these cases, Abraham and Moses. It was mostly his family and maybe one or two, a few others that were truly with him. Joshua, perhaps, Aaron, but even Aaron fell. But, and then most of the others, even if it seemed like they were with him, it turned out later on that in fact they were not, or, you know, they tried to kill him, they tried to, anytime, it was just, they didn't treat them well, essentially. And we can see the same thing with Jacob, Joseph, and David, especially Joseph and David. You know, we know the story of Joseph, his own brothers, you know, just because his father liked him better. He wasn't even a prophet yet. And then afterwards, and of course David, had to struggle and fight his whole life, even though he was chosen by God to be the king. So, then we go to probably the loudest example of this whole lecture, of course. And Christ has every period of his life, you know. Again, when he was first born because of a prophecy, they tried to kill him. And then when he came back and began his mission and began his prophethood. Of course, what does it say in the Bible? What does it say in the Revelation about Christ? About the third seal? It says that he is the one with the sword, the sharp sword. He comes with the sharpest teaching of all the teachings. And so he left them no recourse as to, you know, he attacked them at every turn. And there was no compromise, or his mission was to rile them up completely, basically, to cut out everything that they had done wrong. And that is not the way to be liked by humanity, by humans. And so, during his prophethood, he told them that he was the Christ, and they expected different things. They expected him to just elevate them above others. We all know. And he did not. He told them they were wrong, in fact, that they've been doing things wrong. He attacked the leaders and the powerful very strongly. He called them a generation of vipers. And he threw the money changers out of the temple. He didn't just say, you should get out of the temple. He literally threw them out of the temple.
You mean the bingo players? Is that
yes,
what you mean?
That's exactly what I mean. And he turned off all those lights that right. appear on the... He made them display the greatest sign. But in any case, and we all know the story, you know, he was, in every place he went, there were those that ridiculed, murmured against him, tried to trick him, asked him questions, you know, he said, he casts out devils, and they said that it's by the devil that he casts out devils, and even his own disciple, Judas, eventually betrays him. We know the story, but... Mm-hmm. And eventually, go ahead, Sergi.
Oh, I was just going to say, and they asked him why he ate with the lower people, and
mm-hmm. That's right.
Why he accepted, you know, somebody washing his feet and things like that,
mm-hmm. And why he healed on the Sabbath.
Actually, no matter what he did, they found fault with it.
That's exactly. Right. Exactly. The moment he said he was a prophet, they had a problem with it, mm-hmm. And that's exactly it. The moment you say you're a prophet. That's
even though they were expecting a prophet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. 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 And let me just check my notes. Yep. And of course he is eventually crucified, the ultimate. Not just killed, but tortured and caused to suffer, ridiculed. You know, they said, come and save yourself now. If you're a prophet, bring yourself down.
And they offer him vinegar instead of water when he was hanging on the cross. Oh,
that's right. That's right. And, of course, there were a few that accepted him. We know of the twelve apostles, and there are some accounts that he may have had up to 72 disciples that, you know, he truly taught, and taught not in parables but in truth, and went to spread his teachings. But that was it. You know, again, very few. The majority did not. And of course, in this case, it was prophesied to happen. This was part of his mission. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he had 33 years of life, and his last 3 years was entirely this. Mm-hmm. And next we go to the fourth seal, Muhammad, Islam. So when Muhammad first receives his revelation, he goes to Khadija, and Khadija takes him to the Christian scholar, and he says that yes, they are expecting a prophet. So again, they're expecting a prophet, but once he starts preaching, and of course, Muhammad was a well-respected, you know, well-known, prosperous merchant, and probably the people that the leaders of Mecca and such were probably more inclined to be lenient toward him at the beginning because of his reputation and such. And in fact, when he first started preaching, I mean, I'm sure they ignored him, and they probably said bad things about him, but they didn't really care too much as long as all he was doing was preaching and saying there is no God. There is one God. You know, they would have been perfectly willing to add that God to the other 360 gods in the Kaaba. But what the problem was, when Muhammad started teaching that there is no God but one God, and not only that, but we have to throw the other gods out, get rid of the idols, and only worship the one God, and very aggressively preach this. And of course, the problem with that is that it attacks the prosperity and power of Mecca. So they didn't really do much until he started really pushing at their ego, essentially. And then they realized they had to do something about it. And even then, they said, this is from Maitreya's lecture on the fourth seal, it says that before they openly opposed him, they went and talked to his uncle who raised him. Muhammad was under his uncle's protection in the same tribe. And they said, you'd better go and talk to your nephew and tell him to stop this. What he is saying is going to hurt us all. If he just says that that is his god and the other gods are okay, we will leave him alone. We will give him a good position, a lot of money, and everything he wants, but he has to stop saying that there is only one god and there is no god beside him. His uncle went to him and said, that is what the leaders in the city want you to do. And Prophet Muhammad answered, if you put the moon in one of my hands and the sun in the other, I will not stop my mission. And of course, at that point, you know, they realized that Muhammad was really not going to stop. And he was actually a serious threat because, you know, many of the poorer people, the slaves, were interested in what he was saying, was learning from him, he was gaining power, and that was not good. they could not allow that. And so they tried to ostracize him because he was still under the protection of his tribe. And so they persecuted the followers, the slaves especially, who had no rights. But they were not able to attack him physically. Of course, they ridiculed him and such, and I'm sure they tried to discredit him in many things. I've heard that they accused him of being a plagiarist, accused him of being a poet, you know, many other things. But more and more, they tried to have the tribe that protected him to remove their protection so that he would not be protected. And finally, that did happen, and we all know the story of how they tried to kill him. They had the one person from each tribe spear him, they tried, so that no one could take the blame. And of course, he had already tricked them, and he was already on his way to Medina. And then began the next phase, and when Medina first accepted him, but later on, there were more and more problems, especially with the previous religions there, the Jews, the Christians, and that's true, that became more and more true all over. As they began to realize more and more that, yes, they were waiting for a prophet, but Muhammad wasn't bringing what they expected, they began more and more rejecting him, resisting him, and attacking him. And we know the story that he eventually had to throw many of the Hebrews, or it might have been the whole community, I'm not sure, out of Medina, because they were rising up against him. And this happens later many times in his history and through the wars. And, of course, he eventually has to go to war and fight. And even after he wins and brings back Mecca and puts the one true God there, he is eventually poisoned. And that's what this picture is him, like, it's an interpretation of him at the death of the poisoning. So they got to him eventually. They tried the whole life, and they eventually did. Muhammad was accepted by a lot more people than the other previous religions that we discussed. He had more followers, but still.
Wasn't that prophesized, that he would conquer one-third of the earth?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And next we go to Bab Baha'u'llah, the fifth seal. And I'm going to go a little quicker. I think I'm going a bit too slow. I haven't checked my time. But, of course, when the Bab came, again, they were waiting for a Messiah, and they expected him, but he was kicked out of just about every county that he tried to develop a presence in. Many of the mullahs, the Islamic leaders, debated with him, and they attacked him and all of these, because, again, he did not indicate that Islam was the best, and it would not change. And once he started really gaining some power, and don't forget that Maitreya explains that the Babi movement was very, they were expecting that now that the Prophet was here, they would bring the kingdom of heaven on earth by force, essentially. And so they were a very militant group, and really trying to, and so once he gained some power, it started becoming an actual threat to the government and the religious leaders. And as soon as that started happening, it was no longer allowed. And of course, he was imprisoned. He was brought out and given a trial in which, essentially, he was not. It was basically them attacking him and ridiculing him, and then eventually, of course, shot, as we know. And exactly. And then Baha'u'llah, who took up his mission afterwards, was put in prison in Iran before he eventually fled. And went to Iraq, where he was exiled. and his life, Baha'u'llah's mission and teachings were much less violent and much more flexible. Or how would you say? Lenient, I guess, than Bab's teachings. And so he was allowed to live, and in fact, he had a pretty good life near the end of his life. He was more and more lenient, but for a while, they had their eye on him, and he was exiled. And then we finally go to the sixth seal, and if you were all at my lecture, if any of you were at my lecture last year, you probably remember the history of Ananda Marga, how he was, the same as all the other religions. He was persecuted by the previous religious leaders. He did not fulfill their dogmatic expectations. Once his movement became powerful, again, the government was afraid of his power, so he was persecuted by the government, imprisoned, and poisoned. And nowadays, Ananda Marga is still labeled as a cult in many countries, and that's partly because there were many followers that did a lot of terrorist acts and such that were too radical, but also it's because of fear and such things. So, oh, yes, and then we have the others. Zoroaster, we don't know much about because of how long ago he was, but I did find something that says that there were obstacles posed by competing priests and the ruling class, that he had difficulty spreading his teachings and was treated with ill will in his mother's hometown, and in another book, he is said to have been murdered at the altar by a group called the Tyrrhenians. I'm not sure what that is, but... Then if you look at the minor Old Testament prophets, of course, this is well known. Jeremiah was thrown to the bottom of a well. The people said to the king that Jeremiah spoke out against them and said that they would lose the war, and the people spoke to the king, and they said, this man should be put to death for saying this. And he was thrown to the bottom of a well. Another example is Urijah. This is also talked about in the Bible, a prophet named Urijah who was killed. He prophesied against them, and they killed him. Simple as that. And the mystical paths we don't know so much about in terms of Shiva and Krishna. We do know the Mahabharata, which explains the war that Krishna was a part of. For the Buddha, we know the story about the man that tried to kill him, that tried to drop a boulder on him, Devadatta, and that's what this picture is. The story that they tried to kill him. And Native American prophets, again, we don't know much about, but I'm willing to bet they were not accepted too well, the true ones, etc. Joseph Smith, the Mormon leader, was tarred and feathered at one point in his life, and many other things happened to him, etc. So, let's review. This is where you guys have to talk again. I gave you a break. I was planning on making you tell all of those stories. That was my initial plan, but I gave you a break. So, let's review. Have we been accepting or rejecting the prophets of God?
Oh my God, we're rejecting over and over again.
Have we honored them or persecuted them? How many did humanity kill or try to kill that we know of?
All of them.
Jeez.
Most, at least. Now here's a question. Why were some persecuted less? Why, for example, did Abraham live to a ripe old age? Why did Baba, even, die a natural death? Or Krishna and Shiva, or Buddha? So one possible reason is that the mission of each prophet is different, and some prophets came to bring a much stronger and harsher revelation than others. Many, you know, such as Christ, who came to attack the old ways and destroy them, to shut them down. Whereas someone like Abraham, his only mission was to begin a new group of people, to begin the Hebrew nation. And the one story that talks about him attacking old dogmas is when they tried to kill him. But during the course of time, when all he was doing was creating the nation, being given promises and such, he wasn't attacking anyone else's dogmas, so they left him alone. The same thing can be said for most of the mystical past prophets, who mostly talk about going within and such things as that. When the teaching is about internal, you know, going internally, it's not socially oriented. It doesn't threaten the existing movement or the existing order or the leaders in such a way that, in fact, the only reason Baba was really persecuted is because his teaching includes a very strong social aspect. And he spoke out very strongly against the Hindu teachers, the Brahmins, and the government, very strongly. And that's what got him persecuted, was mostly. But for many of the prophets, many of these prophets that were not persecuted, one reason could be that their mission was not to be as... And the same thing with Muhammad. If Muhammad had just said, you know, this, you know, it's okay, you know, work on yourself, but he was very strongly, you know, we kick out all the other gods. So you can see that those prophets that had the different mission, not to attack the ego or try to bring down the leadership, they were not persecuted as much. Or the ones that never became that powerful, you know, during their lifetime, to the point that people felt threatened by them. But for all the ones that had a harsher message or went against the existing order, they were persecuted pretty badly. usually at least murdered or tried to be murdered or something similar. So the question becomes, oh, actually, I'm going to read two things first. Do I have time? Yeah, I think so. So, who has been, this is from a satsang by Maitreya. Actually, it's, yeah, I think so. Who has been persecuted? Wasn't Noah persecuted, and Adam, Moses, Muhammad, and Christ? Even King David was persecuted for a while. He ran away and eventually returned and became king. Who else was persecuted? Weren't the disciples of Christ persecuted? The disciples of Muhammad were persecuted. The disciples of Bob were persecuted. The people who followed Noah were persecuted. Blessed are they, because they will inherit the kingdom. They have been chosen to inherit the kingdom. They are the channels of God. Who would be better to inherit the kingdom than the people who are the channels for God? Their efforts were not wasted. Any lifetime they came, they were persecuted. They had a hard time. But each time they came, they gathered a few more people who would listen to them. So their numbers increased and increased and increased. And it says in the Quran, ever a messenger was sent to them, they mocked him. Ever. So the question becomes, has humanity rejected every single prophet? Is there a single prophet that humanity accepted and listened to? Can you think of any?
Jonah?
You got it. That is the only one. Eunice says that probably Jonah was a surfer.
Yeah, that's a great picture.
And I'll read something from Maitreya's lecture about Maitreya. Indeed, the only prophet who was listened to was Jonah, who went to the city of Nineveh. He told them that God sent him as a messenger to tell them that because they were so wicked and they were going against God's will, such a disaster would come to them. They all repented, put on sackcloth, and sat on the ashes. They even put sackcloth on their animals. They all repented, cried to God, and said, sorry, you are right, we are wicked, we repent. They turned around, and therefore the disaster was stopped. From 134,000, and that might actually be meant to read 144,000, but from 134,000 plus prophets that have come to humanity, they have listened only to one. How optimistic can I be? 1 over 144,000 mathematically is almost equal with zero. So it's not all gloom. This is not meant to make us feel bad. It's meant to give us a lesson and teach us. And so from here we can ask, who rejects the prophets and why? Can anyone answer that? Who mainly rejects the prophets?
The powerful, the rich.
And the ones that feel they are comfortable and don't want to see change during their loving natures. Mm-hmm.
The intellectual spiritualists and those who are attached to this world.
No, you're wrong about those. Mine. Sorry. She read it off the screen. Exactly. That's why we see that when each prophet comes, if they attack the rich, powerful, those who are attached to the world, the ones at the top, which are usually the ones that are most ungodly and need to be attacked, when they attack those, that's when they really get in trouble. That's when the people really, that's when, you know, they start getting really persecuted and problems really start happening. In fact, whenever the prophets come, it's the poor and the lowly that often accept them, at least to an extent. And it says this in the Quran, that the disbelievers say of those who had believed, this is from Surah, the wind-curved sand hills, Al-Aqaf. The disbelievers say of those who had believed, if the Quran had been any good, they, the poor and lowly, would not have accepted it before us. Since they, the unbelievers, are not guided by its truths, so they say, this is a fabricated lie from the ancient sayings. And it's true throughout history. The poor and the humble, the ones who have little to lose, are very willing to accept the teacher. But even them, the thing is that those who do not reject do not necessarily accept. I mean, how many multitudes followed Christ, but how many truly accepted Christ? Mm. Right? Mm-hmm. And the same is true throughout history. Mm-hmm. Really, there are only a very few, as Maitreya said in that earlier discourse I read, that really come with him and accept him. And it increases by a few each time, but it's a very few. So overall, 99.99% of the world will reject the prophets. Those who are rich and powerful and have something to lose will reject them actively and forcefully, or dogmatic, scared, fearful. And even the ones that are ready for something to change, something to improve their lot, will probably not accept him in the way that they should. Why?
That's cute.
Simple enough, right?
That's great. That's great.
That's why the whole universe was created, because of this problem. So again, as we've said before, when the Prophet attacks their attachments and desires, when the Prophet says, you know, when Muhammad says to the Meccan leaders that I am going to destroy your what you consider to be the base of your prosperity, or you have to give up your love of the world, when the man comes to Christ and says, I want to follow you, and Christ says, the rich man, and Christ says, give up all you have and follow me, and he can't, right? And he leaves. And those dogmatic Jewish leaders that had everyone under their control until Christ came and stirred everything up. And also those who, with the dogmatic expectations. Every religion, every group of people expects the next prophet to raise him above others, to raise them above others, or to instantly come down and make everything better. No matter what God prophesies or anything like that, it always ends up being this way. That's what the Jews expected of Christ. That's what the Christians expected and Jews expected of Muhammad. That's what the Muslims expected of the Bab. That's what they all expect of Maitreya. And then they have their specific, you know, that I read something that Maitreya can't be the Maitreya because he took his first 7 steps in the world. 7 lotus flowers didn't literally spring up at his footsteps. And many other things such as that misinterpretation. Other examples are they rejected Noah and also Muhammad, it says, because they saw that he was immortal. He was just like them. And they expected him to be something better, some magical being. It's not what our fathers worshipped. Attachment to tradition, attachment to culture. There's so many examples, I could go on forever, but I think the gist is understood. Mm-hmm. What other reasons? Can anyone else give reasons or examples? Just a few? To keep you involved?
Well, I think there are those that start to accept the prophet, but when they see that the majority is not accepting him, they turn back. It's that parable about, you know, in the end, their roots don't root in the good ground.
Mm-hmm. Peer pressure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Worry about the culture, what people will think of them. Worry about reputation. The priest that came to Christ in the night and asked him questions because he thought he wanted to know the truth, but he was too afraid to lose his reputation. Absolutely. Give me one more and we'll move on.
Well, I was just, you have it up there, you have attachments, and I was thinking attachment to their culture or their background, like the way that the Jews expected Prophet Muhammad to promote them as the chosen ones, and he didn't do that. The Jews expected that they would pray towards Jerusalem, mm-hmm, and Prophet Muhammad didn't do that.
That was a big point of contention, wasn't it? That's right. I remember that.
Yes, right.
As soon as he said that they should pray toward Mecca, they got a lot of people started murmuring against him. It wasn't what they expected.
Right.
Question, and aren't there also those that are just so crude or ignorant that they just totally are not in a position to see it?
Right. So totally lost, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I wonder, too, if sometimes people are jealous. They think they should be the Messiah.
Yeah.
And they don't fulfill any prophecies. They haven't brought in any scripture. They don't do anything, but they have a dream.
Or they think they know.
Or they know. Think they know.
Right, they know. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Absolutely. Okay, so the essence of it is this. Yep. That prophets tell the truth, which we do not want to hear. If we wanted to hear the truth, the universe wouldn't be necessary. But every step towards the truth is a great struggle, pushing and pulling and jerking. Come on. So how do we justify it, right? What are the things we tell ourselves? What are the things they told themselves that they were in the right?
That I'll do it next year. I'm not ready yet.
Not ready yet. Procrastination.
If it was correct, everybody would accept it. So therefore,
you're right. Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I have to follow what my family follows. Mm-hmm. I have to follow my tradition.
Right. How about the focus on small problems, fault finding? Do you remember this? Throughout history. Think about Christ, right? Christ comes and he prophesies, he fulfills all sorts of prophecies, he teaches with authority, he purifies. But the moment they see his disciples eating on the Sabbath, why are your disciples eating on the Sabbath? They're not supposed to eat on the Sabbath. Or when he heals on the Sabbath. Why do you heal on the Sabbath? That's forbidden. You're not allowed to do that. And of course he says, if your donkey fell into the crack, would you not lift him out? Mm-hmm. And so through that small problem, they say he cannot be the Messiah. Despite everything else, because of this, he cannot be the Messiah. Or with the Bab, another great example. When they brought him up for his quote-unquote trial, his mock trial, they brought, I think, as I understand it, they brought some of his writings, and they pointed out grammatical errors in the writings, and said, how could you be the prophet with these grammatical errors? Or they laughed at him for those. And Maitreya has many of them, we know many of them, that people have come into satsangs or sent him emails, why do you wear glasses? Mm-hmm. They asked Baba the same thing, why do you wear glasses? Mm-hmm. Why do you, why is your grammar not perfect? Why do you stutter when you speak? That was prophesied to come, that Maitreya will stutter, but why? Why are there errors on the website? Why is it not perfect? Or they ask him, what does Jeremiah 15:7 say, interpreted? And then when he asks, can you tell me what that verse says? They said, you're supposed to know all the verses. You must not be it.
You see.
All right, so all of these are justifications that these people tell themselves, that we tell ourselves. Right? How about try to trick the prophet? Right? Do you remember they asked Christ, say there is a woman. She marries the first one, man, first the man, and then he dies. Then she marries a second man, and he dies. And so happens seven times, so she's had seven husbands, and they're all dead. When she dies, who will be her husband? Or even better, an example is, should we pay tribute to Caesar? Right? They wanted him to say no. They should pay tribute to God, and then they could accuse him of being a traitor and kill him. Of course, he outsmarted them, but he said, give that to Caesar. Give to Caesar that which is Caesar's, and give to God that which is God's. But that was their hope. Can anyone think of any other examples of tricks, trick questions that they've tried to use?
I was just thinking that verse in the Quran where it says, and they schemed, but God is the best schemer. I don't remember what the situation was in the Quran, but God is the best schemer. But I don't remember what the situation
was. Yeah, me neither. But I'm sure it was something. I mean, yeah. even when they were, you know, they decided that we will kill him with each person from one tribe, you know, putting the spear in, so that none of us will be to blame. As if that will prevent the karma, you know, that none of us will be to blame. Or when they try to catch him again, when they realize he's gone, and God spins the web across the cave wall. God is the best schemer.
Or when they shot at Bob,
and right.
Apparently, probably every person who had their gun pointed to him, they didn't want to kill the prophet of God, so they pointed somewhere else, and then Bob left to finish his writing.
Yep, that's right, yep. They shoot, 1,000 sharpshooters shoot, and all that happens is the ropes get severed and Bob runs away. What? Yep. How about we ask for our own proof, right? We're not interested in what God gives us. We want our own proof. What's the most famous one that every prophet has been asked, probably since Christ and probably before? Maitreya has been asked it. I've even been asked it on behalf of Maitreya. Give us a sign. Do a miracle. Right?
Heal me.
Heal me. Mm-hmm. Do something extraordinary. Do something magical. Perform a miracle.
Interpret my dream.
It says in the Quran, it's talking about a minor prophet from previously, and it says, you, Thamul, are but a human being like unto us. Then bring to us a sign if you are of the truthful. Humans always look for miracles instead of concentrating on the truth of the teachings of the prophet. That's from Thoh. There's a story of Muhammad. It's called The Three Questions. According to Muslim tradition, the Quraysh sought to discredit Muhammad. I believe Quraysh was a tribe. Theologically, after failing to stop him by other means. They sent a delegation to consult with the Jewish tribes. The Jews, who had far greater experience with prophets, supplied three Gnostic questions to be asked from Muhammad. One, what is the story of the young men who left their people long ago? Two, who was the traveler who had reached the ends of the then-known world? And three, what is a description of the Holy Spirit? They advised that if Muhammad was unable to answer those questions, he was a fraud.
Oh, my heavens.
And an admonition was contained in the part of the Quran that was revealed, along with the answers to the questions posed. Muhammad finally answered the questions. And it says, these young men are the seven sleepers of Ephesus, and further description was delivered as Surah Kaf. The traveler was Dhul Qarnayn, I'm sure I said that wrong, whose journeys are also delivered as Surah Kaf. And the third one, this question can't be answered since the Holy Spirit exceeds human understanding. And then it says, though the answers were considered satisfactory, the Quraysh did not convert to Islam. And that's a pretty, I would say that the spirit behind that story is quite, happens quite often. Mm-hmm. And that can't be verified as being true. This is from Wikipedia, what I just read, but it is a tradition. Mm-hmm. So. Or the Bab was asked many times to write commentaries on specific verses or surahs in the Quran. Many times, you know. In fact, one of his largest debaters, Muslim debaters, like one of the most well-known and respected ones in Iran, I think his name was Vahid, but I don't, that might be wrong. Actually, never mind. I don't remember his name. But he went to Bab and he asked him to write commentaries for him. And he actually became a convert because of the commentaries that the Bab wrote, because they were amazing. But many times he was asked to do so. and as proof, you know, write a commentary explaining this surah. And just as Christ was expected to save himself from the cross, you know, after all that he had done and said, you know, when they finally had him under their control, they said, now save yourself. The same thing with Bob. They put him up on the expiring cloud, and they said, now you save yourself. And then he didn't die, and they were completely flabbergasted, and the first 1,000 sharpshooters refused to shoot him again. They had to go find another group of sharpshooters because they were absolutely, you know, amazed that could happen. And Maitreya has been done the same, just like you said, Mommy. Interpret my dream. Tell me my past. Do signs and miracles. My Maitreya teleports. Right? Remember that? Remember that? It's on the internet. Your Maitreya can't be the right one because mine teleports. And even Maitreya has been asked to write commentaries on certain verses. There's a link, there's a page on the website about Zechariah 14 that he was asked to write. And many other things. Many, many other things. They don't go to the prophecy section of our website. That's not what they're interested in. And false accusations, of course. And I was going to ask what else, but you guys already provided quite a few good ones. So. But again, let's use this lecture and what we're talking about here as a lesson to help ourselves. So the real question we should ask ourselves when we read about this and think about this and talk about this is, do we do any of these ourselves? Right? Think about it. When you read something in Tho that is not how you expect, right? Or Maitreya sends you an email that you're not doing well, you know, something is wrong, you have to fix things, or yells at you. Even if you don't say it out loud, inside your heart, inside your mind, the thing, little words that run through your head, you know, do any of these happen? Do you start fault-finding? Everyone should ask themselves these things. That's the only way to destroy the ego, is to bring it out. Don't ignore it. If it's there, it's there. Whether or not you say it's there, it's there. The first step is to say, yeah, I do that. And then you can start overcoming it. Right? And this will also help us to understand others, those that come to the mission and become discerning, as Christ says, and Maitreya says, that you have to become wise as serpents. Innocent as a lamb, but wise as a serpent. We have to be discerning of these people that come, of everyone, to see what is the base of their questions. You know, are they truly seeking, or are they trying to justify something like this? Right? So I, if you notice, I haven't gotten to Maitreya yet, and that's why the question is Maitreya any different? Is it any different this time? We've seen how they treated all the other prophets, right? How about this time? Yes or no? Is it different?
No different, except that I think he will stay alive and live a full life this time.
So, he's been accused of many things, hasn't he? He's been attacked and called the Antichrist. He's been told that he's bringing people to hell, that he will go to hell, that everything he says is wrong. Do you think that if they had the ability to harm him more, they would have?
They sure would have.
Probably.
How many people are accepting Maitreya's teachings? Truly accepting, again?
Very few.
Very few. We've barely reached all of humanity. We've probably reached 1%, maybe. I mean, I don't know. But we've reached very few. And even of that very few are here. You know, it's probably 1% of even those we've reached that are really following. The letter to humanity is a great example. The letter to humanity is the same as Jonah, right? Same idea. But unlike Jonah, they did not listen. They have not listened. We have really gotten absolutely no response. And we've had many members that have sent hundreds of these, you know, all over. But it's not all bad. On the other hand, he has been protected from physical harm. And this is all within God's plan. This is where we see, again, why this is the seventh and final revelation. The difference now in the mission and the way that God has protected and set this up, right? Do you remember God set aside a land in the time of Peleg? He prepared the U.S. All of this religious freedom and tolerance, you know, the idea that we have the ability to say whatever we want, Is it conceded to say that this is all for Maitreya? I don't think so.
No, not at all. Not at all.
I think, in fact, it was all for Maitreya.
God's plan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And technology.
Mm-hmm.
Even if Maitreya, in fact, this is happening in China now. You know, all of these young people, they want to say what they want to say, speak out against the government, and, you know, attack their leaders and all of that. They don't say it in person. They say it on the computer. They say it over blogs and things, and that's how they are mostly kept from being persecuted. They can say what they want online. The same thing is here. Mm-hmm. Even if Maitreya was in another country, technology would protect them. This is a double protection. Even in the U.S., we're over the internet. Mm-hmm. The worst you can do to him is shut down his computer.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Right. So even if they wanted to, God says, no, you can't. Second, and of course this is probably the most important one, is we have the prophecy that he is the thief of the night. Right? And we may not like it, you know, it means that we have to wait and
struggle.
Be quiet and struggle and only get the very bare minimum and watch as the world destroys itself. But what it means is that he, again, remember we talked about earlier that when the prophets are really persecuted is when they become powerful, right? Maitreya has not been given the chance to become powerful. God has not given him that chance. He's kept them small and quiet. And so instead, Maitreya has been able to complete and perfect the teachings as no other prophet ever has. He was not given just a few years. He was given his entire life, and it's continuing. And he did not dictate it to other disciples who then wrote it down, or write it once, and then, you know, he was put in prison and couldn't reread it, or has many manuscripts all over the place and none are compiled. It's all on the website. Written by him, edited by him, revised by him, and approved by him. Right?
Right.
And another thing Maitreya himself has said is that, well, first we know from the article that he wrote that this mission is not really going to be that big until the third lifetime, right? Or at the end of the second lifetime, in fact. That's when really things are going to start going. And so, by that time, Maitreya, you remember, in the other religions, they hate the prophet until he's gone. And then, usually they can accept the teachings much easier. They also try to change them and stuff, we have to prevent that from happening. But, as long as it's not Maitreya himself pushing it, or, you know, giving it to you, you see, there seems to be an easier way to accept those teachings. And so, in Maitreya's next lifetime, he's going to be able to say, these are Maitreya's teachings. And so, probably, we feel, Maitreya feels, that it will be easier for people to accept what he says next lifetime, because it won't be him saying it, it'll be him saying it on the behalf of Maitreya. And so, not only will the persecution probably be less, but also, Maitreya will no longer be there to be persecuted. It's not possible. So we can see God has planned this out very, very, very well. And finally, what we've been talking about throughout this whole feast is that our teachings and our whole plan is evolutionary, not revolutionary, right? We are not here to have the sharp sword. Not yet, at least. We are not here to attack the leaders and bring it. I mean, we do in our writings, we tell them the truth, but we don't do it in a way that threatens them. We tell them this is what's going to happen, and we don't have to do it. God's going to do it. So there is no reason for us to be persecuted, even by American government, even by the other religious leaders. They might watch us, that's possible, but we have given them no reason, because all we're doing is just waiting. We're just preparing the teachings, spreading the teachings, and waiting for the rest of it to fall apart. So again, our teachings are not the way that the other prophets were that were so persecuted. I should say our mission is not that. And the most important one is, of course, God has promised that this time will be different. The thief of the night, and I'm going to read something from Maitreya's writings. Oh, man, I'm running out of time. All right, let's see. But in our case, there is no prophecy that there is going to be such suffering. Actually, it says he is going to talk to everyone, but he never goes to the street, as we can see it now. God created the United States that there is freedom of religion. You can have any religion you want, and no one is going to persecute you for your ideas or your religion. If I had started this mission in an Islamic country, and especially in Iran that is much more closed, even more closed than when the Shah was in power, yes, I would have been persecuted and probably would have been killed a couple of times by now. But God has prepared much preparation for this revelation to come, because this revelation is mostly explanation. It explains what has been a mystery to humanity up to this point. It explains every point of religion that humanity had accepted as revelation from God, that they did not know what it really meant in a deeper level. It is really very intellectually explained to humanity what it is that God has been trying to give to humanity. And if you understand our teaching, really there is no mystery left for you. It explains every point, every question, every revelation. Everything that has been in the past that has not been given to humanity now is absolutely given now because it is the seventh angel. It is the end of it. I do not foresee any great physical suffering, but I have to tell you that I have suffered emotionally, intellectually, discriminatively, and socially. There is suffering, no doubt, relationship-wise, with the people who come and claim they love the mission and they wanted to be in the mission. Well, you heard some of them. You have been involved with some of them that even affected you emotionally. Of course, as the disciples of Christ also suffered, you probably suffered also emotionally because some people came and claimed and then they did not do what they promised. In that sense, there is a great suffering, emotional suffering. Or people claim and then you see they do not exactly mean what they say or promise and they do not follow through. When you do yourself, always follow through with your promises. So that kind of suffering has been great in my case. But you can see that even I have suffered in one. So you can see that even I have suffered in one sense. But I have not been stoned. I have not been put in prison. So with my last 10 minutes, I'll take a couple final thoughts and try to put this all together as to something useful. Right? Why is this important? Why is all of this? Nothing in our teachings is just to make somebody feel bad or just to have intellectual knowledge for the sake of having knowledge. There's a reason. What's the reason? The reason is that history is a lesson. And we have to use history as a lesson to guide our actions in the future. So understanding how the prophets have been treated in the past and how terribly we have dealt with those teachers that God sends to help us helps us understand why humanity's way will not work. Why God asked us not to eat of the tree of good and evil and says, don't do what you think is right, do what I say is right. Because the results of what we think is right is laid out before us as history. This is what it causes. It causes the death of every prophet and the rejection of every prophet except Jonah. Just one. Right? And everyone knows in statistics that, you know, eventually there's going to be one outlier. You know, so it's just not going to work. Only God's way will work. And it also helps us to better understand ourselves and others in terms of ego. To understand why, the way these people did these things, the way that we rejected the prophets, the reasons we used to justify it, why it happens, how it happens. Think about those and apply them. Look at your own life in that way. Look at other people in that way. See, are they doing the same things? And help it to understand and overcome and help others. It's also good to use it to understand and reevaluate and think about how we treat Maitreya in this lifetime. Are we treating him the same as the other prophets were treated? Are we as bad? And the others. And then into the future. It said that more prophets, minor prophets, will come if necessary to bring the teachings back. Now, hold on a second. What's going on here? Anyway. Sorry. And he said more prophets will come if necessary to bring the teachings back to their correct place if necessary or to bring small missions. How will we treat them, right? We hope that it'll be better because we're in the kingdom of heaven, but we have to remember the lessons of history to make sure that if a prophet comes, he has clear signs from God that he is a prophet and he brings a revelation of truth that we accept his words. If we don't, it's going to be no different. And finally, Maitreya himself will return in 1,000 years. That is the prophecy. humanity will fall again, and the prophet will need to come one more time to bring people back. And I'm afraid that probably the answer is yes, he will be treated the same then as before. Because if humanity's fallen, then that's how they'll treat. But let's do our best to make that not happen, huh? Let's see if he uses these lessons to consider that in the future and try to break the cycle and do better. So think of these, like this lecture and these ideas in a way that will help humanity, your personal life, your community, and others to progress. And that's it.
Oh, my golly.
That was really awesome, because I was just wondering how it was going to go with that topic. It was so different.
Awesome.
Thanks, God.
Thanks, God.
Very, very good lecture.
All thanks to God.
Isn't there also a prophecy where Maitreya is king of the kings? You know, isn't that also one?
You mean in 1,000 years?
Is it 1,000 years, or is it the third lifetime, or is king of the kings?
I don't know. I mean, by the third lifetime, even those that will want to persecute him will hopefully have no chance. I mean, there will be the last battle, right? That's Armageddon, and in the last battle, I mean, it's going to be the battle, like the final battle between, you know, those who want to persecute him and those who are with him. And this time, finally, the good ones are going to win. Right? So. Sure. Go ahead, Sergi.
I was just going to say, in the chat, there's a question.
Yeah, yeah. Sure, ABC, go ahead. If you have a mic, you can speak. Okay, that's okay. Just go ahead and type. I will let you know, though, that if you have questions about our teachings in general, I'm just going to direct you to the website, because we ask anyone who is new to the teachings to go and study and learn for themselves. We've put a great amount of effort over the past 10 years in making our website a fantastic resource. Okay, great. Okay, go ahead then, please. But if you have questions about the lecture or something related to the lecture, yeah, I'd be glad to answer. Sure, go ahead. We have a couple minutes. We can go over a bit if necessary. All of you can leave if you have to go. Are you Benjamin Abramson? Is that you? Okay. That's funny. So you're asking in relation to the questions you asked from last year's feast, huh? So the question is, so Maitreya has said that Taoism is not from God. Can you please explain? And if I remember correctly, what Maitreya said is that you asked if Taoism was part of the mystical paths, or if the truth of Hinduism was more than the truth of Taoism in terms of the elements and things like that. And what Maitreya said was that, yes, since Hinduism was the primary way in which Maitreya learned the teachings about the mystical paths, then he would assume, or he believes, or he knows, that that is the more true way to explain it, since that's how God revealed it. It's similar to how we accept the King James Version of the Bible as the most true, because that is the one that God revealed to Maitreya. If we believe that Maitreya is the prophet of God, then we can believe that his life is guided in a way that he is led to the most true understandings of each of these religions. So, I don't believe that Maitreya necessarily said that Taoism has no truth, or there are not parts of Taoism that are true and from God. He just said that Hinduism is a more provably and accepted true and correct way of explaining the mystical paths, especially in terms of the elements and things. I am sure that there are truths in Taoism, as there are truths in all of the religions of the world. But if there is something in Taoism that contradicts with Maitreya's explanation of the mystical paths, then that is obviously something man-made and not correct. He's saying, I also noticed that in the fourth seal, the dark side is on top of the light side. Can you please explain why this is? To me, it doesn't look that way. It just looks like they're on their side. And Maitreya explains that when it's in the horizontal position, it means that the spiritual forces are not awakened. And in the vertical position, it means that the spiritual forces are awakened. That's a question that Maitreya might be able to answer for you better. Are you aware he has two sessions this feast that you could ask questions for? If you have these questions, you could send them into the mission. He can provide better answers than me. Okay. Then I think I'm going to ask you to go ahead and ask. No, the first one is tomorrow morning, tomorrow in the day. So I think you should go ahead and send these questions to Maitreya, and he will ask them much better than me, answer them much better than me. So it's good to see you, though. I'm glad you came. Mm-hmm. Precisely. All right, any other questions about the lecture or any other comments? I hope it was useful. I hope that God used me to provide some wisdom and help. And that we can all reach pure consciousness with God's grace.
Actually, all the lectures were really well done. So, anyways, just a statement to share as feedback.
Thanks, God, Kesha. That's good news. Thanks, God. By God's grace.
Saloma.
Okay. Ben, why don't you write about it in the Mom Brothers group or the Mom Outreach group? Because I have to close the room. So why don't you write about it in the Mom Brothers group and we'll talk about it, okay? Okay. I'm going to close the room. Salam alaikum.